My name is Debbie Lancaster, and I'm the superintendent of Wrangell Public School District. Good evening, Mayor Pruszynka, assembly members, city manager Von Bargen, Captain Spray, and fellow community members. Thank you for this opportunity for allowing me to give you an update of the COVID-19 response that's in place at the Wrangell Public Schools. As you know, our schools have been designated as an essential business and must serve our students remotely until the end of our school year. Therefore, we have not closed. Our plan as a district is to work with all of our staff members to maintain health mandated guidelines and do meaningful work from our home or in the school buildings. We understand that keeping our staff working in a healthy environment helps keep our local economy in better shape. Our team has been very creative and effective in moving forward to support education and the community of Wrangell. We're also paying a local food industry to provide lunches for our students. By doing this, we also contribute to the local economy. Since March 16th, we put procedures in place to provide distance learning to all of our students. Teachers have offered K-12 students online and paper packet options to continue their education. Our teaching staff has been very creative in promoting safe hands-on activities, utilizing items at home and in nearby outdoor areas. Paraprofessionals have been working with students online and on the phone, and they've been delivering lunches. They've been assisting our administrators and making sure that that personal belongings are being returned to students from lockers and classrooms. Our administrators have also been working with parents to make sure that our year ends smoothly as possible regarding grades, graduation, and even prom options, virtual, of course. Our best and preferred plans are being implemented with the hopes of completion, but understand all the while that everything may change in a moment as we have a confirmed case in Wrangell when that happens. Health and safety is our highest concern. I'm proud of our team. We've done amazing work and will continue to do so, not only for the good of the whole, but to model for our children what good citizens do and what they act like in a crisis. We have a skeletal staff at our schools adhering to strict appropriate state mandates to support technology and cleanup as we close out our school year. One of our professionals has made and donated about 50 very nice cloth masks for all of our staff that is working outside the home, and we really appreciate that. I appreciate this time to speak. I want to thank our healthcare providers, professionals, everyone that works in the healthcare industry, our police fire department, along with everyone who runs this city borough. We have utilities, we have clean walkways, we have trash that's emptied. We have a very pleasant community environment as I walk my dog very far away from everyone else. I also want to thank grocers, restaurants, hardware stores, and other shops that have helped all of us during this time to cling to what we used to call normal. What you're doing helps us educate and feed our students, and it helps our families as well. Thank you all, and I appreciate the daily updates on the confirmed or unconfirmed cases. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Lancaster, and thank you to your team at the school. We appreciate all that you're doing. Lisa?
Yes, Dr. Pruszynka is back online, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Lynn, go ahead. We're still having technical troubles getting her on the line. Kim, do you know what's going on there? Should we...
Lynn, are you on the line?
We don't seem to be connecting. I know she's at the hospital right now, so maybe we can reach out to her by phone, and if she would like to participate later, we'll continue on with the meeting and hopefully get an update from the hospital. Is Letha on the line?
Can you hear me, Mr. Mayor?
Can, yeah. Go ahead. Obviously, you and Lynn aren't in the same room.
She texted me too late. I had already left the building.
Okay, sounds good.
She said she's on the line, though. Huh.
Kim, can you... Your phone is not muted?
Here, let me.
I don't see.
You may not know how to unmute the phone.
I don't see her number with.
I don't know if she's on a computer. She's at the hospital, so I don't know what she's on, but.
If she's on a phone, *6 will unmute her.
Okay. Lynn, if you can hear us, press *6 and see if that unmutes your. My guess is that her number is the 50305. No, that's not her. 5001. There we go. Lynn, are you on the phone?
I am. Sorry about that. Computer difficulties.
I was ready to have your back, Dr. Przanka, but go ahead.
Lisa and I are always trading off who speaks at meetings. I'm sorry, I missed what you had requested. Do you want me to just give a general update or do you want me just to answer questions?
Lisa?
A general update, please, Dr. Przanka, if you would.
Absolutely.
Thanks.
Okay, so Wrangell Medical Center, we are a 8-bed critical access hospital. That means that we have 8 acute care beds that are filled at varying degrees that ebb and flow with time with citizens who have medical needs. This continues whether we have COVID patients or not. We have planned for a potential surge of COVID patients. Our most realistic plan is that we've converted the old operating room, which is a very clean environment, into a 5-bed ward for COVID patients. We have 3 vents. The vents are old and are meant for transporting patients, which is what we usually do with vented patients. They're not meant to maintain somebody for a long period of time, but we do have 3 functional ventilators. We had Dr. Bruhl had the foresight to order back in February 3, well, more than 3, but 3 for us, much better vents that came with our own oxygen concentrator. They looked fantastic. They were supposed to deliver to us last week, but the supply chain got interrupted by FEMA. And I'm hoping that those vents are saving a life somewhere down south right now. For now, the plan really is not to maintain a vented patient until they can come off that intensive care in Wrangell. For now, the plan is to transfer patients to a higher level of care once we have deemed that they're sick, whether it's just like we would with anybody, whether it's COVID-19 or otherwise. We are extremely grateful to the community who has all stepped up and done the social distancing and the hand washing that has been so incredibly important to get us to the safe place that we are right now. With the Medevac service, we have verified that Guardian, Life Flight, Airlift Northwest, and Lifeguard Alaska, maybe. Anyway, the 2 main ones that we're used to, plus the one that is coming sometimes down from Anchorage, all are fully equipped to take COVID-19 positive or suspected patients to a higher level of care. The good news we've had from Seattle is that they are opening up more ICU beds, and they think by the time we hit our surge in mid-May, they will be able to accept patients from Alaska, which is marvelous. At the moment, the hospitals up north are accepting patients, and Sitka Mount Edgecombe Hospital has its surge capacity has developed an entire wing, a much bigger ward where they have more beds, more ventilators, one respiratory therapist, and they're hoping that they can absorb a lot of the needs for Southeast Alaska for the surgery if the Native Hospital up north gets overwhelmed, or there's other reasons that we can't transport patients to higher level of care with fully functioning ICUs. So if worse comes to worse, though, and the weather goes down and we can no longer use the Coast Guard to fly people out, and or there is some other unforeseen thing like all the hospitals are overwhelmed, all the hospitals we'd be transferring patients to would be overwhelmed, we will do our absolute best to maintain as many patients as we can on the ventilators that we have. We've spent this time without any patients carefully planning between the nursing staff and the doctors exactly what we can do, as well as sort of nailing down how we can reduce the risk of COVID virus spread within our hospital, within our staff, within our long-term care, within our patients. The beds probably in Wrangell aren't going to be an issue, the actual number of beds. The staffing is going to be pretty hard to sustain for a period of time. The accepted nursing ratio for a ventilated patient, meaning the number of nurses on one shift per patient on a ventilator is 2-to-1 in a regular world. In a crisis world, 1-to-1 is acceptable. In a we have absolutely no other choice, last hurrah world, we could maybe do one nurse to two patients. But past 1-to-1, it really becomes dangerous for the patient. So we have kind of three scenarios. We have what we'd like to happen, we have what we think we could cope with, and we have if things really balloon here, we have what would we do to try to do the best that we possibly can, the sort of Italy kind of situation. So we've thought through all those scenarios. One of the good news on the horizon is that we are going to get a rapid tester, and so that's really game changing for us. The IHS plus ANMC has managed to get a few testing kits that they can send to the various communities in Southeast, and we are scheduled to get one. It was supposed to arrive today and it hasn't, so we're expecting it tomorrow. It has made it to Southeast Alaska, so I'm very hopeful that it won't go the FEMA route that the ventilators went, but we will get about 40 tests initially. So we're guarding those very carefully, and not guarding them as in not using them, but making sure that we can get the most effective use out of them. So when would we want to use them? We'd want to use them if one of the nurses went down with symptoms that could have been COVID. If we have a patient admitted with chest pain that also is short of breath and has a fever, that we want to make sure that they're not COVID positive. If we're going to send somebody on a medevac who has symptoms of COVID, we would use it then. All these things that really, if we find out right away, it makes a significant difference. It doesn't mean we don't have access to the other tests. The other tests are sent to LabCorp and they're sent to the state, and some are being sent now to ANMC. The ones that go to LabCorp and to the state take a large range of time to come back. It depends on their flow. It depends on things that are beyond our control. I think the longest I've seen has been about 10 or 12 days. The shortest I've seen is 48 hours. It's getting better, but it's not perfect, and it's kind of dependent on Alaska Airlines and our weather and the time that they come in for the test and how overwhelmed LabCorp is at any given time and how overwhelmed the state is at any given time. But those tests are actually the more accurate, meaning everybody's got a test that is about 95% sensitive, but the sensitivity of the tests that go to the state and to LabCorp, the ones that take longer to get back, are sensitive at a lower viral load than the rapid test is. So it's good to have all these in our toolbox, but there is some subtle changes or subtle differences between them. I've got a question for the city, but maybe I should stop there and just see if anyone's got questions for me first.
Thanks, Lynn. Does anybody have a question for Dr. Prasanka? By the way, I don't call her Dr. Prasanka around the house, just so everybody knows. Julie Decker.
Thanks, Mr. Mayor. Dr. Prasanka, do you have any thoughts or ideas how the city might advocate for getting more rapid tests, even though they're not perfect? Any thoughts there?
Yeah, we are advocating every time we can for more tests. It would be a lot safer for the community if there was enough tests to test everybody who was coming to town as a worker, everybody who was the... no matter how you look at it, having more tests, having more rapid tests makes us safer. They're in limited supply right now. We keep getting different information about how much might come our way. Initially, we had these marvelous reports that we were going to get 40 to begin with and then 250 every week for then on. That's really been scaled back, and we believe tomorrow we're going to get the 40. We have heard that we may be getting as many as 50 a week, although the people who've already got their machines haven't received their weekly allotment. So, it's always a changing. Dr. Brule and CERCH in general is pushing very hard to get us into the communities. It makes a difference here, and I know it makes a difference for industry coming back in, but you can only imagine what sort of a difference it makes for some of these small, isolated places that are trying to shut their borders completely for people coming in or back home after they've had to travel out for medical issues or what's happening, what could potentially, and people have talked about in some of these places, is an elder or somebody who just doesn't want to leave the community, period, no matter what. So it's super important to keep communities safe, and the sooner we can get a good supply of these tests, the better off we are.
Assemblymember Powell and then Assemblymember Larrabee.
Yeah, Dr. Prasanka, I'd like to thank you and staff up there for all you guys have been doing. I just have, and I just beating a dead horse, I guess, but with all the talk about all the plans coming through and anything, everybody that's through all the industries, just one industry has called the hospital about their capacity of, if this does hit us hard.
They haven't called me directly. That's one of the things, one of the reasons I was hoping to be able to talk tonight was to give the lowdown, as I see it as the medical director, of what our true capacity is. And I'm hoping that I was able to express that today. But have the industry reached out to me as the medical director? No, but I'd like to actually defer that question to Letha. She's still on the line to see if she has heard anything directly from industry leaders.
Letha, are you still on the line? Letha?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we got you now.
Okay, hi. I thought I was unmuted. No, I have not received any calls from anybody within the fishing industry, specifically. Dawson, of course, has reached out to us only because they work for us and they're building our new hospital here, and they are they did submit a plan, but that is the only organization that has reached out to us.
Thanks. Assemblymember Powell, does that answer your question for you then? Do you have a follow-up?
No, that's fine. I'll talk later.
Okay, thank you. Assemblymember Larrabee.
Yes, I was just wondering if, as you were explaining that the ratio of nurses in a scenario that may be less than appealing might be pretty low, have you explored lists of community members with training that would be adequate to help in triage in a scenario that might be necessary? Say the EMT, ZTT, other people in the community that have training that may not necessarily be working at the hospital?
Yeah, that's a tricky question. When we look at our nursing staff, we've kind of identified the nurses that could really work in that intensive care setting, the ones that have had some experience doing it before. And not all our nursing staff are going to be able to do that. So to take that and expand it to EMTs, ETTs, and retired nurses to work specifically with our ventilated patients, unfortunately, I don't think is realistic. But what we have done is develop a list of retired nurses in the community and have approached some of them to say, would you be, if it was a crisis situation, would you be willing to come in? It would be very difficult and very dangerous under those circumstances to be having them manage ventilated patients. But again, on our sort of plan three, where we have no other choice, we would do the best that we could, but we would probably be in very dire straits.
Lynn,
What we think with the one-to-one nursing care, and it would also mean that you would have the providers at that point staying in the hospital full-time, and so we'd have to have one provider who could manage the non-COVID people and the emergency room, and one person who is always ready to respond to the ventilator. So we'd be looking at having two providers, one of two doctors and one of a doctor and a nurse practitioner doing 12-hour shifts, and so potentially in between. The nurses would also be sleeping at the hospital between shifts so that they, if we were dealing with COVID patients, so we're not taking them, not taking germs out of the environment back to our houses or back to the community for the most part. And that's where it becomes non-sustainable for a very long period of time. We would still be hoping to ship those patients out, but anything more than a few days, we exhaust our staffing resources.
Mayor Pasunka, may I ask a follow-up question?
Go ahead, Assemblymember Larrabee, go ahead.
The additional personnel, EMTs, ETT, may not be able to help with things like the care of ventilated patients and things like that, but I imagine the majority of that kind of stuff will be happening at the hospital. Could they be able to help pick up some of the slack over at the clinic for not urgent care people and things like that in that kind of scenario?
Well, we'd open up the clinic and have the other nurse practitioner, so the one that's not in one of the teams, she would be working over here, and we would approach some of the retired nurses to be working under those situations too. The EMTs are doing an enormous service already by responding to calls. We want to keep them healthy and happy. If we had a need to have them come, if something else happened, like if there was a big boat accident, or if there was a house fire, or if there was something else that suddenly there was a surge of emergency patients that weren't COVID-19 patients, because, you know, just because you have one crisis doesn't mean you can't have another. I think at that point we would be asking the EMTs that were available to help. Now, they're not going to be managing patients. That's not their training, and even under those circumstances it wouldn't be appropriate, but they can do a lot. They can report on patients, they can watch patients, they can transfer patients, they can record vital signs, they can change dressings. There's lots that they can do, but we wouldn't have them step into that provider role.
Thank you so much for that update, Dr. Pasunka. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
Lynn, would you mention a bit about the CNA exemption we're working with for increasing bed numbers?
Sorry, say that again.
The CNA exemption that you're working with, where there's an 8-hour course that young people take, and did you not have a program for CNA exemptions?
Yeah, actually, maybe I should defer to Lisa on that one as well.
Lisa, you got to take your mute off. No, it looks like we lost her.
Okay, well, let me talk about it. Yeah, there is the licensing organization in this crisis has opened up for crisis intervention only a very abbreviated CNA course. And what that means is there's an 8-hour training that the person can go through, and then it's basically on the job training. You come under the guide of a nurse or another CNA and get some training there. It's just very good for the hospital to have those extra bodies, especially if we end up with 6 staff members that are out for 14 days or whatever it might be if they come down with COVID. So it builds a little bit more resilience into the system.
Excellent. Any other assembly members with questions for Lynn? Lisa, I know you're on, you just texted me. Did you want to add anything to what was just said? Okay, we're not hearing Lisa, but.
We're having technical difficulties.
Assembly Member Decker.
Dr. Prasanka, can you tell us, do we have any antibody testing here available, or do you know anything about the future of that in Wrangell?
The rapid test is an antibody test. It tests, though, for the antibody that is created with the acute infection.
Okay. So a follow-up, Mr. Mayor?
Yes, please. Go ahead.
Okay. So from my lack of knowledge, is that the same then, or is that different than once you've had it and you've sort of recovered, like being able to test and check at that point?
Yeah, I don't pretend to be an expert in this area, but the rapid test is an ELISA test, and it does test for the antibody, the IgM antibody that is present with an acute infection. I believe that the tests that they're trying to do on large amounts of folks, like down in California, are testing for the pattern of antibodies that shows up when you're convalescing. But that's not what our rapid test is designed for.
Okay,